Now, from WGN Radio News, a look back at the day that was, and a deeper look into issues and stories with Andrea Dahlers and the reporters on 720 WGN.
And happy Tuesday to you. Welcome to Andrea and the Reporters. I'm so happy to be back with our second show and another panel of my fellow reporters with whom we all share a passion for journalism and storytelling. We'll get to the stories they've chased, the process of gathering, and the unique adventures they've had along the way. And I'm super excited tonight to have on our panel three of the top reporters in Chicago. They all happen to be women who have forged a path to uncovering some of the biggest stories this city has ever read about. They've all come to us mainly from a print background or a digital platform, and their names are synonymous with neighborhood news, breaking stories on a local and international level. They're all award-winning journalists, and I think they are true, tried investigative reporters. We welcome Jody Cohen, Stacy St. Clair, and Stephanie Lulay. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you all for being here. This is super exciting. With that, I'm going to have each of you give just a little bio about yourselves. I think it just sounds so much nicer rather than me reading off a chalk list. And at some point, you'll say, all right, just stop. So let's start with you, Jody Cohen.
Sure. So I'm a reporter with ProPublica Illinois. We are the local affiliation with ProPublica, the national nonprofit that focuses on investigative reporting. And I joined ProPublica about 18 months ago. Prior to that, I worked at the Chicago Tribune for 14 years. And before that, I was a reporter in Detroit.
And you still miss the Tribune Tower?
I do.
I know. The history, right?
It's a great place to work.
Just being in that building. Stephanie Lulay.
Hi. Yes, I'm Stephanie Lulay. I'm co-founder and managing editor of Black Club Chicago. I'm a rather new newsroom, also a nonprofit that is focused on delivering news from Chicago's neighborhoods. We kind of grew out of the death of DNA Info, if you're familiar with that story, and kind of resurrected this type of news here in Chicago, but as a nonprofit and a little bit different of a business model. And so previously, I worked at DNA Info as a senior editor. And before that, as a reporter covering the West Loop and Pilsen neighborhoods. Prior to that, worked in the suburbs at the Aurora Beacon News covering an array of issues.
Both of you, again, award-winning as well. And I could go on about all of your accolades as well. I know you guys have really big top honors as well, 2012 and 2010, I believe. What were your biggest awards?
Well, let's see. In 2010... I was named Illinois Journalist of the Year for some reporting on higher education. My husband makes me display this Midwest Emmy Award. It's always a conversation piece,
I would just, are you kidding? I would display it proudly. I still have Emmy Award nominated at the start of my name. So one of these days, I'm going to put it right in the front room.
I was more excited for her when she got her Emmy than she was. I was like, look, you have an Emmy.
Right.
And she's like,
And then, of course, Stephanie, first place Northern Illinois Newspaper Association for the best news story, and that was in 2012. And that was that Jericho Circle?
Yes, it was. I covered the tearing down of a public housing complex, kind of like Aurora's Cabrini Green, and followed residents there for about a year. I was really lucky to do a project like that at that time. Still working on housing issues here today in Chicago.
Absolutely, like as though we don't have so many of those going on right now.
You're right.
Stacy St. Clair.
Hi.
Good to see you.
Good to see you,
friend,
too.
Many years.
My name is Stacy St. Clair. I'm a general assignment reporter for the Chicago Tribune, and I've been there since 2007, and before that, I was at the Daily Herald, and before that, the Dayton Daily News.
Soon to be Pulitzer Prize winning. I always say
soon.
That. Soon to be Pulitzer Prize winning, Stacy St. Clair. You came to fame, I have to say, and I should probably wait for this, but when I said national and international, I know so many people across the world know you as the Sochi Olympic reporter with the dirty water.
Yes, with the dangerous face water. That is me. That will be the opening line of my obituary.
Right.
I hope the second line is, but she did other things in journalism, I can't guarantee that it will say
that. Jason Van Dyke, George Ryan, Rod Blagojevich, College of DuPage.
None of that you know, it all pales in comparison
to Sochi.
Yes.
To Sochi.
Dirty and the little face water.
And, right.
Face
and
water,
the little dog that got away.
And the dog I tried to adopt who disappeared.
Away.
Yeah.
We're going to spend some time talking about each of you and stories that you've covered. But why don't we start a little bit with the news of the week? We have a new governor, J.B. Pritzker, a new lieutenant governor, first female African-American lieutenant governor, Juliana Stratton. I think she's going to take... Personally, in my opinion, I think she's going to take much more of a leadership role. We're going to hear her name, I think, in the news quite a bit as well, more so perhaps than any other lieutenant governor. But what do you all think of J.B. Pritzker? He signed a few executive orders today. It's the first time, I think, in a very long time that every major office in the state is a Democrat. What do we see going forward? Do you see this administration now working closer with the legislature and maybe getting some things done? Do you think we'll hit a budget stalemate again? What do you think, Stacey?
I mean, I definitely think they'll work better, right? Because they're a unified government now. But when the governor signed the executive order today involving the unions, that's the first thing the Republicans said, like, hey, he was promising bipartisanship. And the first thing he does is this executive order that doesn't include, you know, any input from us. So I think that got things off to a rocky start for a bipartisan government. But I think things will still flow pretty easily now, at least more easily than they did during the Ronner administration.
Right. What do you think, Jody, Stephanie?
Well, now there's no excuses not to get things done.
Mm-hmm.
Every major office, all the General Assembly is all controlled by the Democrats. So... there's not going to be that excuse that we couldn't work together, we couldn't get things done.
Right, right. You think we're going to see a budget stalemate, or what did we go, 2 years last year without a balanced budget, or 18 months before we had a signed mm-hmm. balanced budget? You foresee that again, or you think, again, kind of along the Jody lines, that this is going to be more amicable, more harmonious than in the past?
It should be, right? Everything that we're seeing tells us that it should be, and we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting, too, to see how Governor Pritzker... Oh, gosh, now we have to stop ourselves. It's like writing the checks where you're at 2019. Yes, instead of governor-elect, now it's Governor Pritzker. How Governor Pritzker works with the new mayor of Chicago. We have 15 candidates now in the race, mm-hmm. down from 125. No, I think originally 21. Down from 15. You know, and I sort of see this. I wanted to get each of your thoughts, too. I saw this as kind of the people who got in before Mayor Emanuel announced he wasn't running, mm-hmm. and the people after, you know, the division. Because initially I saw it as Gary McCarthy and Paul Vallis really kind of maybe going neck and neck. Now I see more of a Tony Preckwinkle, Susana Mendoza. But who knows? I mean, I think this race is really up for grabs. What do you think?
Well, Jody and I were with a group of people Sunday night, and usually it's a like-minded group where everyone's backing the same candidates and everyone thinks the same people are going to win. There was not a single person at the table who thought, you know, no one agreed on who was going to win, and no one agreed on who they were backing. It was all over the place, mm-hmm. and that surprised me, because usually, you know, we're a group that gets together pretty often, and everyone's sort of lockstep on who's going to win and who should win, and there was no agreement.
Yeah.
At the table.
I find it interesting, too. People from the suburbs who obviously are not going to be voting, but still weighing in on this, namely a lot of my family, bringing up candidates like, well, I really like Lori Lightfoot or LaShawn Ford, or people who you wouldn't have expected to be a front runner at this point. So do you think it is anybody's race at this point?
I really do. There's so many candidates, and they've spent so much time really focusing on each other and not on the issues.
Yeah.
And I think that leaves people with not so much information, and really making it difficult to differentiate in some ways between them. And it does right now seem like it could be anyone's race. I think some of the candidates are trying to differentiate themselves in the same way you just did, before right. Emanuel decided, you know, not to run, and after. And I think that's been... you know, an interesting way to position themselves.
Yeah,
too.
Divisive, too. Stephanie, you cover the neighborhoods, too. And what I've seen Rahm Emanuel do a lot of is really focus on, and Daley, to an extent, too, at the end of his administration, really focus on the neighborhoods and rebuilding. And I've seen a lot of these mayoral candidates, in fact, all of them, I would say, safely, focusing on the neighborhoods, saying, let's get in there and let's rebuild. Do you see that?
Yes, and I think you know those signs. You've seen them all over, right? The 606, any big development that really Rahm put his name behind. But it is interesting that in so many neighborhoods, you know, the residents there feel like they've been left out, you know. And I think that's why you see, like you said, so many kind of these candidates that you might not consider a front runner have deep ties to the neighborhood. And in that neighborhood, you know, they're a celebrity and, you know, they're going to garner a lot of votes. And that's why this election is so interesting to watch.
What do you all think of the response that you get just when you're out on the streets or when you're talking to people about Lincoln Yards? I mean, that's been a topic that has just exploded over the past 6 months, I would say. Are you getting a lot of positive, negative, or is it just divisive overall?
Yeah, Lincoln Yards has been a gigantic story for us at Block Club.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's because it has tremendous potential to change that entire area. It's been interesting for me to watch. Personally, I used to cover the West Loop, so that developer that's, you know, leading the charge on Lincoln Yards, Sterling Bay, they're responsible for a number of big developments in the West Loop, the McDonald's headquarters, the Google building, and some other prominent sites that have yet to be developed. So it's been interesting to kind of see them, really magnifying glass on them from kind of a citywide, People are upset about this citywide and how much money could potentially be going to this developer and to the project, through a proposed TIF.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely a polarizing topic. Another big news story of the week is the third annual Women's March that was going to take place in Chicago this weekend, and then it was canceled, and then it was just brought back. Now it's going to be a rally in Federal Plaza. So I'm wondering, your opinion, do you think the Women's March is still going strong? Has it lost its muster? Is it stronger than ever? Where do you stand on the Women's March? Think it'll be as highly attended as the first one?
No, and I think it'd be really hard to top being as highly attended. But I think once something gets sort of labeled, you know, anti-Semitic or having racist leanings, that's a taint that's hard to scrub off, right? Yeah. And so I think it will have some residual effect, because, you know, think back to that march. There were so many women who were marching for the first time.
Yeah.
And if you're thinking of going to march for the first time, are you going to pick a rally that there's, you know, has some question marks around it? I'm not sure you do.
Why did it get to that point? I mean, why do you think that, you know, it got to the point of, instead of gaining steam, it seems to be losing a little bit of momentum, especially now since we've just sworn in more women in Congress than any other time?
I think it's what Stacey said, because of the taint that's on it now, with the, you know, accusations of some of the leadership being anti-Semitic and having, you know, there being other concerns about who is, really leading this right now. I do think it will not have the same turnout that it had the first year, just because it's not the first year, and because of these taints, and also, it's going to be a really cold weekend.
I was just going to say, 20 degrees in Chicago.
Right,
that
snow.
First year, if you remember that first year, it was like an unusual 55-degree January day.
Yes. It was
people
beautiful.
Were
yeah.
wearing like light coats.
Right, and pink hats.
Right,
pink little kitty hats. Mm-hmm. We're talking to Stacey St. Clair, Jody Cohen, and Stephanie Lulay on the second episode of The Reporters. We'll be back after this on 720 WGN.
Back to Andrea Dailish and The Reporters on WGN Radio.
Thanks for being with us, 723 720 WGN. We have an awesome panel again tonight. Stephanie Lulay, the managing editor and co-founder of Block Club, Stacey St. Clair from the Chicago Tribune, and Jody Cohen, formerly of the Tribune, now with ProPublica Illinois. And we talked a little bit about the news stories of the day, but I want to get into each of your backgrounds. I want to know what drives all of you. How did you decide to become a reporter? Jody, why don't we start with you?
Oh, that's good, because I can't top Stacey's story. So I don't want to go after
her. What goes on during the break?
So stay tuned for Stacey's story.
Yeah, that's a great tease.
You know, I had an amazing English teacher my freshman year of high school whose husband was the newspaper advisor to the high school newspaper. And she took me aside and said, I really think you would be good at and you might like writing for the school newspaper. And I did. I wrote about sports, and I was really hooked from the very beginning. I loved being able to go places where I wouldn't otherwise go or even be able to go and talk to people and learn about topics that I didn't know anything about from high school until now. So that's really, I credit my teachers in high school, who I still keep in touch with both of them. I get letters from them in the mail about, every other month. And I just saw them when I went back to New Jersey.
That's awesome. And I love that they still write letters to you, too. That's very cool. Stephanie.
Yeah, well, I'm going to tell a story about my grandpa, Stacy, and okay. I promise Stacey, it's not right. as great as Stacy's grandpa's. So I promise, but when I was very little, 3 and 4, I spent a lot of time with my grandparents, and I would all day long just be asking why and how, and just so curious and wanting to know how and why things work the way that they do. And I ask questions so much that it's kind of a, recycled story in my family. They tell this about me all the time, that my grandfather at one point, looked over kind of exasperated at my grandmother and said, "Does she ever shut up?" Right? Because I just couldn't stop asking questions. And I think that probably we all have stories like that. And it really is just, I still am the same way, so many years later. I just want to know how and why things work. And, being a reporter and an editor, I get to ask those questions every day for a living. And sometimes people even answer, and it's
right. And you get paid to do it.
It's great, and it's a blessing.
Absolutely. Stacey. The build up,
right? This is, what if it doesn't live up to the billing? My grandfather was an AP photographer who covered World War II and later on the White House, and he has some iconic images that are part of just sort of the American conscious, like JFK Jr. saluting his father's casket. That is my grandfather's photo. So I grew up in a family where journalists were valued and journalism was considered, fun and noble. And when you're raised that way, it's very easy just to go into that profession. Nobody told me about the lousy pay, though. I wish.
I know, right? It helped, right? But that's your grandfather's photo.
That's my grandfather's photo.
Wow. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. I bet people right now are just either driving or listening at home and thinking, oh my God.
Yeah, you can instantly picture Charles Gorey.
Charles Gorey. Mm-hmm. Well, that's very cool. Yeah. And I think it's neat that each of you knew from a pretty young age that this is what you wanted to do. And you're still doing it. And you're successful at it. It's The Reporters with me, Andrea Darlis. We'll be back after this on 720 WGN.
What happened? What's happening? What's yet to come? It's Andrea Darlis and The Reporters on 720 WGN.
Back with Stephanie Lulay, Stacey St. Clair, and Jody Cohen, our panel tonight. So we talked a little bit about news of the day. We realized that you all wanted to do this from such a young age, and I want to delve into a little bit of your backgrounds and stories that you've covered, because you each have covered some of the most amazing stories to hit the Chicago area and the suburbs as well. Stories that when people hear, they're going to say, oh, just kind of like with your grandfather, Stacey, mm-hmm. Oh, that was your grandpa's photo. Mm-hmm. They're going to hear the stories that you've covered and think, oh my gosh, that was such a pivotal or a groundbreaking story. So that's my first question to you, each of you. And I know it's a little loaded, but what story did it for you? If you have to pick a story that really, I don't want to even say put you on the map, but really just got your name out there, just the story that did it for you, one of the best stories that you ever covered. I'll go in reverse order. So Stacey, I'll start with you.
I'm going to, and not just because of the company I'm with, I'm going to say the College of DuPage investigation that I did with Ms. Jody Cohen.
Which you should have won the Pulitzer for. I'm just saying. Amazing story.
Too bad you weren't on the panel.
Tell everybody about the story.
It started at the Billy Goat with Jody saying, hey, I got a tip about something going on at the College of DuPage radio station. That's sort of your neck of the woods, because I live out in the western suburbs. She's like, do you want to work on it with me? And we had worked with each other a lot, and we enjoyed working together. So I was like, sure. And then it became this, 18-month odyssey of stories, and led to just sort of all kinds of wrongdoing at the college. And the president was fired, and there were federal investigations, and, a radio engineer went to jail. And it just... every time we thought we were done, something else would come up. And I think in terms of some of the writing that we did and some of the records that we uncovered. This is the best work I had done in my career. And also I got to work with Jody, which is, we had a lot of fun, you know, while working extremely, extremely hard.
This story was amazing to me because we would have you on the morning show mm-hmm. and you would talk about it. And then, like you said, something else would happen.
Right.
And something, and this wasn't just, this was hundreds of thousands of dollars being misappropriated. Mm-hmm. And I remember there was one point where, was it the president walking out and he had either just been fired or he was embattled at this point. And he was walking out with his dog, right?
Right.
With his dog.
We had got a tip that he was, you know, leaving, you know, he took leave when he knew he was about to be fired, that kind of thing. And we were tipped off on it. And so we asked a photographer from the Tribune, New Tutanuso, to go out there. And it just so happened, the president walked out carrying this, like, I don't know if it was like a miniature
Chihuahua or something.
It wasn't a Chihuahua, but it was like a really little dog.
Dog, yeah.
And he was carrying it kind of like a baby almost. And yeah. Readers, like, loved that picture. Like, we get more comments like about that picture because I kind of remember that whole series based on the you know, president carrying the dog. And you know, people were like emailing, you know, what's the dog's name? And
right,
we did have it. I can't remember the dog's name.
We didn't know it.
We didn't know it at the time.
18 months of work, FOIA requests. Talk a little mm-hmm. bit about what it's like to do a story that takes, you know, it's not, the stories that we do for radio more often than not, or even TV to an extent, mm-hmm. are quickly on deadline, a quick turnaround, boom, right. you're done, you know, it's maybe your story for the day, or maybe 2 days. But this is 18 months of work. Kind of talk about the process and going through FOIA. Well, look, how do you even file a FOIA request and go
yeah,
through it? I mean,
so,
I know, but I know people out there don't know.
At one point, we knew the number. We filed something like 100 FOIA requests or something insane. And what you do is you basically write a letter asking for the documents you want. And then you have, in the state of Illinois, you have to sort of cross your fingers that the people will actually give you the documents. There was one instance when we asked for the president's expenses where we were pretty sure we hadn't received everything. And then we asked for the expenses that he had submitted through the foundation of the college, which is basically the fundraising scholarship arm of the college. And they told us that the foundation wasn't subject to open records, that the people had no right to know basically what the foundation was covering for the president. And we took that to court. And we won in DuPage court, and then we took it to, they appealed it to the Illinois Appellate Court, where we won what is a groundbreaking ruling in the state of Illinois that says college and university foundations are absolutely subject to open records laws. And sort of, you know, if we're just kind of telling personal stories, one of my favorite moments, I guess my most bittersweet moment being a reporter was the day that ruling came in, about a couple hours before we got the ruling, we didn't know it was coming. Jody and I went to lunch, and she told me she was leaving the Tribune. And yeah, it was it was sort of, you know, it was kind of an emotional conversation for both of us. But when she told me, the first thing I said to her, because we were waiting for this ruling to come back
for months,
and we had a pretty good idea just from the questions the justice had asked that we were going to win. And it was going to be such a big moment for, you know, Chicago and Illinois journalists, because it would be sort of breaking down a barrier.
It changed the law.
It changed, yeah. And Jody, you know, we've been friends for years. We've worked together for years. And my first reaction to her telling me she's leaving is that I said, well, how are we going to celebrate when our ruling comes in? And it seemed like such a ridiculous thing to respond with. And
not at all.
She had left the office that evening, 5 minutes, and I called her and said, turn around. We just won. We just got the notice that we won. And so that was, I think, a really emotional night for both of us.
It's like the goosebump moment.
Yeah. It was a nice way to end our partnership.
That's cool. It's got to make you both feel very good that you literally changed a law in Illinois.
And other laws were enacted because mm-hmm. of that series, like severance agreements are public. They, you know, college executives can only get so much severance pay.
Yeah. Golden parachutes can't happen anymore.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. So I guess that's what I'm my
so any story that you read now going forward, you'll with regard to colleges, universities, mm-hmm. FOIA requests, you'll know that you helped change that law.
Yep.
That's very cool. Stephanie, greatest story you ever covered or what really did it for you?
Yeah, you know, very early on in my career, I sold a story to the Tribune right out of college about forming manufactured gas plants. It's really nerdy. We can get into it another
no,
time.
Not at all. This, it's
but
so cool.
And the toll that they take on neighborhoods, you know, they're kind of like decommissioned manufactured gas plants. And, you know, the coal was left underground and had an impact on a number of neighborhoods in Chicago. But, you know, just talking about a story that I'm really proud of that I covered incrementally, and you know, versus an investigative story like that. West Loopers, people who live in the West Loop probably know me because I was very closely covering the battle between developers and neighbors in the West Loop that was really reaching a fever pitch around 2014, 2015 when I started covering that neighborhood. You know, It was a neighborhood at the time that was just exploding with growth. And, you know, despite efforts to landmark the area and some real pushback from neighbors, you know, neighbors even sued over certain developments sprouting up there. You know, I continue to be fascinated with how much that neighborhood has changed.
Oh, my God. Completely.
Yeah.
Completely.
And you know, the whole conflict kind of reached a fever pitch when the alderman at the time actually called his own constituents that he was representing bigots. He said that the West Loop was becoming a bigot neighborhood because there was so much conflict about new development and renters coming into the area. And, you know, one thing I'm proud of is at the time, a lot of the new developments were being covered by reporters that really focused on it from a developer perspective. You know, the developer wants this. They're proposing this. The building will be this tall. But you weren't really seeing the neighbors that live there. They weren't really given a voice in those stories and, you know, given the chance to weigh in. And you know, in such close proximity, it's a rather small neighborhood. You know, any change and like these new developments really impacted the area, whether that's the need to expand schools or, you know, how much they were taxing existing infrastructure. You know, there's a lot more car accidents over there.
Right.
And the parks are overcrowded. There's a ton of, I know this is funny, but there's a ton of dog poop. It's a huge problem in the area.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's one of the biggest stories, you know, with, mm-hmm. as soon as the snow melts anyway in the neighborhood. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I've written stories about all of that. Some of them are funny. Some of them are serious. But, you know, I'm proud that I gave neighbors a voice.
I think that's wonderful. Jody.
Well, I'm not saying this just because okay. Stacey is on this panel yes. as well, but yes. that's what happens when you put both of us on the
I
same
know.
Show.
It's okay.
But I
was methodical about that.
I have to say the stories we wrote about the University of Illinois admissions problems, I can't believe it was almost a decade ago this spring, but that's where we uncovered, for those listeners who don't know, where we uncovered that the University of Illinois had a secret admissions system for student applicants who had connections to lawmakers, trustees, other powerful people, and they were able to get in to admitted to the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign over less qualified applicants. They were able to appeal their rejections through a system that was not open to anybody else. They had their own, there was a special category for these students called Category I. And we exposed this secret admission system. And as a result, this secret admission system no longer exists. Almost the entire board of trustees were replaced. The president was gone. The chancellor was gone. I mean, it just
and that was under Rod Blagojevich,
so
was it not? Wasn't he kind of a not? I don't want to say a facilitator,
yes.
but he was the governor at the time,
and they were his board members.
Yes,
the ones that were implicated. Mm-hmm.
So you could almost argue that this investigation probably was maybe just a little chink in the armor that was the Rod Blagojevich era.
So yeah, I mean, federal prosecutors
sure.
did, in grand jury, subpoenaed,
right.
after we wrote about it, subpoenaed the admissions records as they related to Rod Blagojevich.
It's all, each of the stories that you're talking about just really affects. So it, as would that be the story that has most affected you? The one that you just each cited? Which, interestingly, I would have cited, okay, for Joe, when I was researching the panel for tonight, Jody, I would have said that for you. Stacey, I would have said the Olympics for you. Mm-hmm. And Jericho Circle is what I would have said for Stephanie.
Yeah, it's so I covered Jericho Circle, like, very early on. And I do think it impacted even how today, you know, we do things at Black Club, because I was given the rare opportunity to cover kind of the mother hen at Jericho Circle like they were the mayor, right? Like, every move that she made as Jericho Circle was being torn down, I got to cover it. I got to sit out there, you know, 8 hours a day and just observe what was going on. And I do think, you know, like, she was a normal neighbor, you know, as like we call it, right?
Yeah.
And I was given such leeway to cover her and that story. And I do think that influences the way that we do things today and the stories that I like to cover today.
312-981-7200 is our number. If we might have time for a quick phone call at the very end of our conversation here with Stacey, Jody, and Stephanie. If you want to text us in, though, we're already getting some text questions. Stacey, somebody wants to know about, they want to know the dog story.
The dog story.
From the Sochi Olympics that you covered.
This is really sad. This is, you know, everyone get your tissue. So
it's sad, but it's really a good story.
So when they basically built the Olympic Village from scratch, right? I mean, Sochi really
was this 2014. Okay,
yeah, and so they had all these workers come in to the Sochi area and build hotels and venues and everything, and a lot of these workers brought dogs with them, and then when they were done, they left their dogs. So by the time, you know, I arrived with all the other journalists in Sochi, there were stray dogs
everywhere.
Yeah. Everywhere. And day by day, the dogs got fewer. And then it turned out that the Sochi government was actually poisoning dogs to sort of,
they were going
reduce
to
the population.
They were going to the dog farm on your grandma's
in Siberia.
In heaven, the Rainbow Bridge,
right? And then there was a really cute dog that would be at the bus stop that I was at every night, and sometimes I would like split a cabbage roll with him or whatever was in my backpack. And I was planning on like, well, how could I take him home? And
And you wanted to. We were talking to you from Sochi.
Yes, I was talking to the Steve Cochran show every morning. And I named him Ivan. And, like, this guy from Switzerland was telling me no, that he had named him Goldie. And I was like, back off my dog, man. His name is Ivan.
Right.
But then Ivan disappeared one day. And I know you keep telling me he's on a farm somewhere, he's happy.
A family with three kids found Ivan.
Texting from Siberia.
It's such a heartwarming story. The fact that you fed the dog, not the fact that the dog went away. This was like your pal for a couple weeks.
He wasn't, but it doesn't have like the happiest of endings. But I think that after the dirty face water, that was like my second most read story from Sochi.
Did you ever think it would happen that way?
No.
You'd become an international Twitter sensation based on dirty water and the puppy that got away.
Yeah, no, I didn't. It's weird to be, even for that brief moment, it's very weird to be a viral thing,
right?
And just sort of the reaction you get. But I heard from like friends from like elementary school who I hadn't heard from in 30 years, so that was kind of cool.
Right, we saw you on Russian television.
Yeah, exactly.
We're talking to Stacey St. Clair, Jody Cohen, and Stephanie Lulay on Andrea and the Reporters tonight. And speaking of things that got away, we are going to ask our panel before we close out the show the story that got away, next on 720 WGN.
It's Andrea Darlis and the Reporters on 720 WGN.
Thank you, Chris Duffy. Well, just a few more minutes left on our panel here, and we have to ask everyone the story that got away. And this is, I told you guys at the very start we were going to ask you this, and you're still kind of contemplating. So, Stephanie, let's start with you. The story, maybe not so much that got away, but is still out there, you're still chasing, you want to pursue, follow up,
anything of that sort.
Yeah, there's several stories that got away. I think, you know, every journalist has a long punch list of stories that they've always wanted to get done. You know, some of those I probably can't say on air because I still want to finish them, right? And I don't want to tip the whole world off to
right,
them.
Right.
But a story that I still think about a lot, you know, you brought up, someone last week brought up a missing person story.
Yes.
And in 2011, I was out in Aurora and covering the disappearance of Timothy Pitson, yeah. 6 years old.
Yes.
His mom was, this is really gruesome, so sorry for listening, but his mom was found later and had committed suicide, and they've still never found Timothy. So
that is, I remember that she took him to like an amusement park,
yep.
and mm-hmm. checked into
in
the hotel.
Dells, yep.
Yeah, and then they saw him on the video camera, and that was the end of it.
Right. And, you know, she had kind of written a letter saying that he was safe with someone. So certainly when, you know, this news last week about the young woman the young girl in Wisconsin is
yes.
found, when something like that happens, it's always in the back of your mind, could he still be out there?
Right. It's always going to be with you. Jody, what's the story that you still want to pursue, you want to finish?
I mean, a couple things come to mind. There were stories I was working on a million years ago in Detroit that I left, you know, behind when I came to Chicago. I, you know, wrote a lot about the University of Michigan, affirmative action lawsuits against the University of Michigan. I always thought maybe I would write a book about those cases and, you know, never did. Never did.
There's still time.
There's, right. I guess maybe there's still time. I mean, a lot of stories stick with me. And, you know, I recently wrote about immigrant children in Chicago who are detained here in Chicago. And I think there is so much to be written about immigration and you know, what's happening here in Chicago. So that's one issue. And I covered higher education for a lot of years. And there are lots and lots of stories here in Illinois that I guess you could say I've been left behind that maybe one day get to report.
There's still stories to tell. Stacey, the one that got away.
The one that got away. Well, the one that got away is different from the one that I would like to see like an ending to, but I'll tell the one I got away.
Okay.
I live on a golf course in the western suburbs, and there was one day I was going to work, and there were these women in like high heels and like really scantily dressed, like on the golf course with like a bunch of guys. And I thought, that's odd. I was working at the Daily Herald at the time. I thought that's an odd sight, but I didn't know what was going on. And then I get home that night and I'm watching the 10 o'clock news, and like Chuck Gowdy has, or someone at Channel 7 has this whole expose of strippers at a golf outing in Naperville. And I was it was literally in my backyard.
Right,
and
right.
I
you sure they didn't work for the Tribune back circa 2000? No.
I was at the Daily Herald, so whatever was going on the Tribune and, you know, 2005 is their business. But so that was one of the times where I was like, you know, maybe really, you know, President Bush is right. If you see something, say something. I should have gone to work and been like, hey guys, there were these porn star looking women on the golf course today, and like maybe made a few calls, but I didn't. It just went right over my head.
And the one was that's not the one that got away. The one you still want to finish.
That's the one I missed.
Like the one you want to finish, though.
I would like to see the Lane Bryant murders come to a conclusion, just to see how that ends. That was like one of the first big crimes I covered at the Trib, and that's got a.
Was it 12 years ago?
It was 2008. So
11 years ago.
Yeah, 11 years. I think the 10th anniversary was last year. It was because it was around this time.
It's just so bizarre because it's multiple murders. You had a just such a vivid description of that suspect. A living witness. Exactly. This came out last week too. This was someone else's story. They always wondered what happened with this as well. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's one I'd like to see.
Well, kudos to all of your accomplishments, all your work. You're three of the top female journalists, the top journalists in Chicago, and I'm so honored to have all of you on the panel tonight. So where can people find all of you and follow you, Jody?
Great. So I'm at ProPublica Illinois. You can find us there on the website, and we ask people to submit questions to us and tips, and it's all there. I'm on Twitter at Jody S. Cohen. Email jodi.cohen@propublica.org, and I love to hear from people. So
awesome. Thank you. Stephanie, where can we find you?
Yeah, you can find me and, you know, follow all of the Black Club reporters at blackclubshy.org. And I'm at Slule2, which is a U of I thing. You know, you have two at the end.
Yep.
Jody will probably recognize that on Twitter.
Right. Careful of her and the FOI request. And Stacey, where can we find you?
Well, probably most often at the Starbucks on South Michigan. Probably meeting with Jody. But no, at chicagotribune.com. And my Twitter handle is at Stacey St. Clair, and that's Stacey without an E.
Well, thank you all for being here tonight.
Thanks,
thank you.
Thank you. Thanks.
News next on 720 WGN.